Mark talks to three members of staff from the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service to find out about their work, including services for the blind or visually impaired, teaching to school children how to prevent a fire, and the impact of COVID. Mark's interview is through Zoom.
Hello there, this is Mark Smith, and I've got with me three members, or three staff I should say, from the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, and they're on duty at the moment in the Green Watch at Great Yarmouth Fire Station, and we've come to this evening to find out a bit more about their work and the work of the County Council Fire and Rescue Service. If I could please ask them to introduce themselves, and then we'll find out a little bit more about the work that they do. So if I could start with you, Mark.
Yeah, hi, I'm Mark. I'm a watch manager here on Greenwich at Great Yarmouth.
My name's Megan. I'm a firefighter at Greenwich Great Yarmouth.
Hi, I'm Matthew, and I'm a development firefighter here at Great Yarmouth on Greenwich.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. I just ought to explain that this evening that we're doing the interview over Zoom because of the COVID restrictions, so please forgive any sound difficulties. And we also need to mention that if we do hear any alarms in the background, that means that you've got a call, so just to bear in mind that we might get a slight interruption. But thank you very much, three of you, for sparing the time to speak to me this evening. I'd like to start off by asking you a little bit about the services that you can provide for someone who's blind or partially sighted in their home. I believe that you've got some information for us about that, Megan.
Yeah, that's right. The fire service have a community safety team who accept referrals. Referrals can be self-referred, which you can do through the Norfolk Fire website, or a referral can be made through social services if you are in contact with a social worker or through a healthcare provider. What happens then is the referral goes to a community safety team, and a member of the team will contact the individual, and they may call you and give you advice over the phone. However, we also do home visits. In the home visits, what can happen is that we will check all of the smoke alarms, if you have any, are working and functional. If you don't have any, then it's possible that some can be fitted. And we'll do maybe a little bit of a walk around and give some advice about how your safety within the home could be improved. Some points, particularly for partially sighted or blind individuals, is being very diligent with keeping clear access and egress around your home. If you need to get out of the home, make sure all of your escape routes are clear, and knowing exactly where your keys are if you need to unlock doors in a hurry. Alongside that is some due diligence with isolating electrics before going to bed. But we tend to say just if you have got smoke alarms, check them once a week, and then you know that you're going to be safe.
Is it still the case of check it Tuesday or something?
That's it, test it Tuesday.
Test it Tuesday, that's right. Yeah, that's great, yeah. And just out of interest, many people have the sort of traditional battery-operated smoke detectors. Do you advise that they're still the best, or what? Is it better to have them hardwired into your electrical system?
No, not necessarily. We have the smoke alarms that we give out here are all on a 10-year battery life. There's nothing wrong with battery-operated smoke alarms at all, as long as they checked every week that they still work.
Lovely. Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. It's useful to know what kind of help we can get from Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, and obviously prevention must play a huge important part of your job, Megan.
Yeah, massive part. We also do prevention for education, so for children in the schools we do, of course, pre-pandemic then. We often did school visits to teach children what they should be doing in case of fire. We did RTC, or Road Traffic Collision Awareness, more commonly for teenagers and young adults, and we also do quite a lot of water awareness, particularly in our patch of Great Yarmouth. So prevention is much better than reaction.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, I quite understand that. Yeah. One thing I'm also interested to find out is about the number of call outs that you kind of receive, because obviously you've got lots of other fire stations around Norfolk, and I guess you're a very busy service, and over the last couple of years with the COVID pandemic, those call outs must have been quite a lot with people working from home and different types of work. So can you sort of paint a picture a bit of how many call outs you kind of get in a typical period of time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so Norfolk Fire Service as a whole, over the last decade or so, receives between 7,000 and 7,500 calls. So, for example, from June 2020 to June 2021, Norfolk Fire Service received 7,480 call outs. We can break this down a bit into three main categories. Fires, of this, just under 2,000 were confirmed fires, which is about 26% of the total calls. Just over 2,000 of the calls were false alarms, which is about 31%. And then the third category is basically everything else that we attend, so RTCs, flooding, assisting the ambulance, rescuing cats from trees, that kind of thing. This was just over 3,000 calls for these, and that was about 43% of the total for that year. Interestingly, as you mentioned about the prevention, if we go back to 2009 to 2010, the total calls was over 10,000 for Norfolk Fire Service. So that's just an idea of what impact the prevention work that we do is having in reducing our call outs, which will hopefully continue to decrease as well.
Yeah, and that obviously must be helping with public safety as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sort of a big change for everyone during the pandemic. Obviously, a lot of people working from home, different risks, a lot more potential for home fires. But the education that we provide seems to be working, which is good to see.
That's fantastic to hear that. Thank you. Lovely. And sort of moving on a little bit, do you have any indication or any figures that you can give us on how many firefighters you have and sort of permanent and retained staff across the county?
For our full-time staff, we have 238 members. That would be firefighter to watch manager, so that would be the three ranks. And on-call, we have 394. So the on-call actually makes up the bulk of our service. We rely heavily on members of the communities helping to staff their local stations.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'm also, talking just before we started recording the interview about you've now got quite a sort of diverse range of staff and quite one or two female firefighters in the service now.
We're getting there year on year. As for the whole time of the 238, 15 are women, which doesn't seem like a high number compared to the 238 members of staff. However, got a lot of historical perceptions that need breaking down, and it will only continue to do so as more women see women in the job, see us being able to do it just as well. So the service are doing a number of initiatives to try and encourage women to think about applying, because that's the barrier, is the barrier to application. I'm not strong enough, or I'm not this enough, or I'm not that enough. Well, actually, you absolutely could be. So really encouraging women to try and see how they get on and think, actually, you could be really good at it.
That's brilliant, Megan. I'm sure that you're a fantastic ambassador there for the cause.
Oh, thank you.
Brilliant, lovely, thank you. Right. Obviously, I'm aware that there must be a huge range of incidents that you have to attend, and you mentioned, Matthew, a little bit about the numbers of the percentage of different events that you attend in emergencies. Can you sort of give us a little flavour of kind of a typical kind of call out that you receive, or the new types of calls? Because I know you were telling me, Mark, that over the 16 years you'd worked for the service, how your job role and the role of a firefighter has changed a lot in recent years.
Yeah, so me personally, I've seen a decrease in domestic type fires, but as Matthew mentioned earlier on, obviously with the prevention work that we've been doing over the years, home safety visits, fitting smoke alarms, educating the public about keeping safe in their homes, does seem to be paying off. But we have seen, over that time, we have seen an increase in sort of RTC, so road traffic collisions, particularly with changes in the environment. We've seen a lot of flooding recently, particularly at different times of the year, in the summer, flash flooding. Yeah, so there has been, our call profile has definitely changed. Of recent, certainly over the pandemic, we've had, we've assisted the ambulance quite a lot, and that's in a way of affecting entry, so whereby the ambulance turn up and they can't make entry into the property, either if the person's incapacitated, then we will assist and will attend with actually making an entry, and also with assisting with extricating of casualties if they become immobile for some reason. So that is a massively increasing role that we carry out. Looking at what our most common type of emergency is, it's difficult to say, to be honest, Mark. Over different districts, we have obviously different sort of risks, really. So say here in Yarmouth, we have obviously a lot of water. So as I mentioned, we do go through a lot of flooding type incidents. A lot of the on-call stations are very rural, so we would see maybe in the summer that they pick up a lot of rural-type fires, wildfires, field fires, that type of thing. However, in the winter, we may be looking at chimney fires. And so even the different time of year will drive different types of calls. So it's very difficult to pin down what is the most common type of emergency we go to, but certainly there has been a change in the call profile over the years.
Yeah, I can quite appreciate that, yes. And that must have kind of impacted quite a lot on the training and the skills that you need to do the job, has it?
Yeah, definitely. So our core, kind of with regards to dealing with domestic building fires with breathing apparatus and the procedures with that, they've come on a long way, but we're still, obviously, we concentrate on that. But there are, like you say, we've had additional equipment to deal particularly with flooding, like dry suits, you know, rafts, inflatable, you know, equipment that we can use to rescue people if they go into water. And also our road traffic collision equipment, so such as hydraulic equipment, which is gradually changing over to battery-powered equipment as well. So, you know, we've come a long way with that as well over the years. So yeah, it's ever evolving, and there's always sort of a challenge, which is good for us because it makes our job, you know, a bit more challenging and changing, which makes it more interesting.
I can understand that. Yes, because I guess there's nothing. There's no room for complacency at all in your job.
No, not at all.
But lastly, I'm interested to find out how the service has had to adapt with COVID, because obviously we're all getting used to keeping our distance and wearing face masks and had to have restrictions on our movement. And I'm just interested to find out what extra sort of cautious measures that you've had to take to kind of maintain the service over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Mark, our sort of primary aim really over the COVID period is to maintain firstly our response, really, so being able to still respond as an emergency service and obviously provide that service to our to members of the public. And there's certain things that we've done or concentrated on to try to do to maintain that. Some of which is, an example would be to try and reduce sickness, a lot of sickness in particular areas. Obviously, with the COVID, it's been difficult with the transmission of infection. So ways in which we've done that is we've created bubbles on stations. So we've separated crews to try and make sure that it doesn't go through and take out the whole watch, or if not even potentially a station. So we've looked at things that we do on stations, so as I mentioned, bubbles, but also face masks, hygiene, so like a COVID security, so looking at contractors who come onto the station, making sure they're diligent with their hygiene, ensuring that we don't have non-essential visitors onto the station. We've also restricted the movement of crews between different stations, so if you're here based at Yarmouth, then generally you stay at Yarmouth rather than being transferred over to Norwich if they're slightly shorter in Norwich, just to try and restrict any spread, really, amongst the colleagues. So, yeah, that was kind of the first thing with regards to the response. But also we've been looking at the off-station activities as well, which have been which we normally would carry out with our normal business. So that's things like Megan mentioned earlier on with education. So where we normally would visit schools, colleges, carrying out home safety visits. It's what we call 7TDs, which is basically making ourselves familiar with premises that have risks and hazards to our firefighters. So we've restricted over the course of the pandemic those activities. So the way that we've kind of still tried to carry out some of that is in an interactive kind of safe way. So with regards to, say, risks that are on our turnout area, we've looking at it via Google Maps, so we can obviously go down and see where the risks are virtually. Also, we can look at the actual risk, written risk hazard information that we've got for the premises, and talking through that with crews, make sure they're familiar with those risks. With regards to the home safety visits, we've graded them so that any high-risk home safety visits, so that generally is people who are over the age of 65, who have no smoke alarms, who may be heavy smokers, you know, it's all risk assessed. Those individuals possibly would still get a home safety visit from the community safety team, whereas people who are at lower risk, who have still smoke detectors, but just need a little bit of advice and education, we could provide some of that information over the phone,
yes,
rather than face-to-face, which would restrict us, yeah, obviously, you know, not only just from protecting us, but also protecting those members of the public as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the kind of off-station activity restrictions that we've done, but also with regards to our operational response, which is the final bit, really, is we've looked at, obviously, our protection if we attend incidents that are involving people that are either asymptomatic or showing signs of symptoms of COVID or actually have been confirmed as COVID patients. We have different grades of PPE that we'll wear, so ranging from wearing eye protection and face masks, as we mentioned earlier on, through to full kind of Tyvek suits, which covers pretty much the whole of our PPE. Which eases with obviously the decontamination afterwards. So yeah, that's how we've been sort of restricting that. But we have, over the period of time of the COVID, we have also been assisting the ambulance a lot more, as we mentioned earlier on, but also with some people who volunteer also to drive ambulances. So just where the ambulance service have maybe been struggling at peak periods, we've had a group of volunteers who actually go out and drive and support with the ambulance service. We've also assisted to some degree with body retrieval and also assisting the police with road closures and things like that. So, you know, over the period of time, our operational response has slightly changed, but also we have obviously had to tighten up with obviously protecting ourselves, but also protecting the public too.
Yeah, wow, that's quite mind-blowing what you have to take into account and all the procedures you have to go through. I'm quite stunned, really, just listening to everything that you have to do. It must be, in some respects, I guess the job must be very rewarding, but you've obviously got to sort of think about everything you're doing all the time and sort of keep in mind lots of procedures. Would that be the right assumption?
It's been very, very challenging over the last 2 years, initially from the start, obviously, a massive amount of change to the way that we work, but not just that, but how frequently things have changed. So obviously government guidelines, restrictions, everything that has come over that period of time, we're obviously having to react to that almost immediately to ensure that we're not only are we protecting ourselves, but we're also adhering to what the government restrictions are saying too. Yeah, it's been challenging, and also it's something that we've obviously had to do.
Well, all I can do is say a huge thank you to you guys who are keeping us all safe. Yeah, it's much appreciated, and I know, you know, how much other emergency services must be appreciating your help, because, you know, as we all know, the NHS are under huge pressure at the moment, and you know, I certainly know that you know, various parts of the country, fire service is kind of stepping in to kind of lend a hand to other emergency services. So that's fantastic. Thank you all very much for chatting to me. I wish you all the best on Greenwatch in Great Yarmouth. It's really good to find out about the work that you do, and just to find out how incredibly challenging it all is. Thank you for all you do, and we'll say cheerio for now. I hope you have a good watch tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Nice talking to you.
That's great.
Mark was talking to Megan, Mark and Matthew.